Welcome back. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana to our very first story. Barely 48 hours after UTAG had declared its intention to embark on a nationwide withdrawal of teaching service, there are reports of division among UTAG members. Already, we're hearing of some at the University of Education, Winneba. There are also reports of an attempt to solve the problem that is emanating or that has caused UTAG problems. On the line is the national president of UTAG, Dr. Harry Agbanu. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother, and good evening to your sharing listeners.
Doc, we're hearing reports of division among UTAG front. What is actually happening?
Thank you very much. As you are aware, UTAG is an association of professionals, astute academics, objective people. And so you can't expect that all of us will agree on one single position. Even though we agree that what is happening is unacceptable, there are dissenting views as to what the solution of the problem should be. But what happens normally is that in a democratic association organization, dissenting views are expressed, but at the majority view that holds. So I am not worried about what is happening in Winneba. Definitely there are people who, for whatever reason, are holding on to their own views on what must be done or what should be done to resolve the problem. So it's expected that all of us cannot agree on one position. But I can assure you that majority of our members throughout all over the country and majority of well-meaning Ghanaians in and outside government are in support of our action to be able to nip this menace of interfering in the administration of our universities in the bud.
Doc, looking at what has happened in unions in Ghana, NAT, for instance, used to be a very, very strong union until some people started withdrawing themselves from activities of NAT. Today we have splinter groups within NAT, and I don't think they can claim to be the formidable union that they used to be association. Today, UTAG, we're hearing a similar thing. Is it the beginning of a journey to a divided front among lecturers?
Well, I'm not sure whether you are absolutely right that the division, the so-called divisions within NAT, has really weakened the position of NAT. I'm not too sure about that. Unionism, we deal with numbers. And so that if there are splinter groups and at the end of the day we can all agree on one position, I think that is okay. But I don't think that what is happening now is the beginning of division within UTAG. I'm not sure about that. But even if that should be, I think that there must be a way, there must be times that we all will agree on one common enemy and would agree to fight that common enemy together.
What has been the response of stakeholders when you first declared your intention to withdraw teaching service effective Monday?
There has not been much response yet. I can tell you for a fact that nobody is happy that we have, taken that decision. And if we ourselves, we are not happy that we have made that decision, but it's a necessity to be able to cure the kind of situation that we have on our hands today. We need to sacrifice today to, nip this in the bud so we don't wake up tomorrow where somebody thinks that because he does not like the face of a particular individual or the tribe of a particular individual, or the origin of particular individual to the vice chancellor and therefore the person to be booted out and an Indian put in his place. So it's a sacrifice we need to make now for a better future of our institutions.
Will you still go by your stand if by next week, Monday, Tuesday, you're hearing that virtually every university in Ghana, some of your members have decided to go to the classroom?
We will go ahead to implement our decision and we'll appeal to those who do not agree with the decision to take the collective interest of the association into consideration and follow suit. But we will go ahead to implement our decision.
All right. Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time on our show.
I'm not sure whether you have seen the latest development on the issue.
Well, I have seen it, but I have contacted the plaintiff. He's neither denied nor confirmed it. He says, quote unquote, the force on him is too much. Source very, very closer to the lawyer who purportedly signed the statement has said it is fake. That is why I'm not talking about it.
Okay. It's good. They are running away from their own shadow. But their shadows will forever catch up with them.
Oh, thank you
very much.
Thank you very much, Doc. Dr. Harry. Yeah. Dr. Harry Agbanu is the national president of the University Teachers Association of Ghana, UTAC, and he's also the UTAC president at the University of Ghana, Legon. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. And moving on to the University of Education itself, Dr. Samuel Atuntono is the secretary of the UTAC local branch at the UEW. Good evening, Doug, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, and good evening to your cherished listeners.
Well, we're hearing of division among your members in UEW. Can you confirm that to us?
There's somehow a division by a group of people I would call some radical group calling themselves concerned lecturers, of which we don't know about them because they are not a registered association. It is just a few of them who decided to take that kind of a position. I can assure you, a large number of the lecturers in UEW are with us.
Have you been able to gather from them the reason for their decision not to be part of what you intend doing?
One thing is clear, that they lack a clear understanding of the issues that we are fighting for. And then, secondly, this group of people have been influenced by the acting vice chancellor to do the things they are doing. And I have to be very clear here. When the acting VC took over, there were appointments that were made by the permanent, the substantive vice chancellor. When he came, he revoked them, claiming that he was trying to, you know, normalize things or follow formal procedures.
Appointments such as?
He has now appointed most of these people who are taunting that they are concerned lecturers into positions as heads and deans. So they are doing so for their own stomach reasons.
So if you talked of they being influenced by somebody, and then you just giving examples. And
yeah.
if it is true that they are not aware of the genuine reasons behind your action, will that not be an admission of a failure on your part as UTAC to educate your people on the course of action?
No. It is not that they are not aware. They are fully aware. When the court ruling came, we gave it to them. All the decisions and the cancellation that when we went for the meeting and took the decision that the strikes will continue, we explained clearly to them all the processes and what they have done up to now. And everyone understood. But because of their particular interest, they took the stand that they have taken. And I can assure you, you can find out by tomorrow, I'll tell you what has happened on campus now to demonstrate clearly that majority of lecturers are not with them.
Is there confusion among lecturers in the university?
There isn't any confusion. As I said, of course, it's a large group. A few people, for their own interest, decide that they wouldn't respect the decision we are taking in Winmer here. That is not to say that there's confusion. They are all our colleagues. We still see ourselves. We meet, we talk. Even when we call meetings, they come. When they say they have a concerned lecturers association or whatever, when we call UTAC meeting, you see them there in their numbers. So I wouldn't say there's confusion. But of course, in every human institution, you have people who have different views and interests. So they're aligning simply because there is this change which we told them it is not the right thing for a court to impose a vice chancellor in a university. That is not a proper procedure. Let the processes of a search party, if the substantive vice chancellor is actually found guilty by the court, then they can start the process of looking for a new vice chancellor. But not when there's no the issues before the court. Then we say we should go on the court is on break. They will come back and continue. Then we see a letter written by the government asking that they should withdraw the case out. Today, you saw what they call a terms of settlement, floated around. I wouldn't say it is genuine or not. We are yet to read the lawyer to find out what it meant. But if that is what they want, I think it's unfortunate, because what we saw in that terms of settlement is clearly an intent for the MP to take over the university here and run.
The picture you've painted, to some or to many, portrays a kind of uneasy calm in the university.
Yeah.
And I'm not too sure that is good for academic work of the thousands of students you are taking care of.
Yeah.
Will you say there is no unity?
Of course, it is exactly so that we are saying that. The authorities that are concerned, this action that we have the minister in charge of tertiary education, we have the NCTE, all those concerned, the council chairman who has just taken over, must see the issue as a very important one and take practical steps to address the situation. Because for me, as the national president has spoken, none of us here is comfortable with the current situation, because the students are around, teaching is not going on. You find a few of them who run into the lecture hall, dish out a course outline and run out, and they're pretending there's work going on here. There's no work here. So the issue needs to be resolved. Then we can get back to a peaceful academic atmosphere to do our work.
However you look at this thing, there is a problem, and the courts, the law court is involved. And
yes,
all of us resort to the law court when we have problems.
Yeah.
So why don't you soften your stand and wait for the court to solve all these things before you take an action?
Very good. I think that is why I indicated to you that when we thought that by October, court would have resumed, because they gave 11, 12, 13 to have the sitting. Then the university lawyer had filed what they call an appeal at the high court, and also a stay of execution also at the law court. The council chairman now came and wrote a letter requesting that the lawyer should stop all these processes because they are not interested in following up the matter in the court. So which way do we go? UTAC in the first place applied to join. They threw it away. The Goose project that we complained that our members have invested their monies in those projects, they have come to stop the projects. They also applied to join. They threw it away. The FO applied to join. They threw it away. Where else can we go? Because we did all those processes, or we took those steps in the interest of hoping that if we get to the court, we can make our case. Here we are, the judge will not allow us. Here we are, the council chairman has written that this will stop the court processes. Which way do we go?
So
are they interested in solving the problem in the court?
Is it the position of UTAC that officially this matter is not going to be determined by the law court?
Well, from where we stand and what we are seeing, I think we know clearly that the council chairman letter, his letter to the lawyer that this will stop, means that there's no way we can get to the court to get the problem solved.
Were you copied that letter?
We were not copied. He wrote it and copied to the lawyer and copied the acting vice chancellor, and we have a copy. It's in public domain.
But as UTAC members, have you sort of meeting the council chairman over this matter?
We haven't met him, but if you listen to our national president, what happened was at the NEC, we set up a committee requesting the minister in charge of tertiary education, that's Professor Kosinyanka, that he should convene a meeting involving the council chairman, the acting vice chancellor, NCTE board chair, and NCTE executive secretary for us to sit and resolve this. As I speak to you, we have made every effort. They said they are not interested in meeting us. So we have no option.
Do you feel beleaguered as lecturers?
Do you feel what? I don't get that, sorry.
Do you feel beleaguered?
Somehow, but as lecturers, I think one of the good things we enjoy doing our work here, the fact that we must have academic freedom to work, and we're always confident that whatever steps we take, we'll get our issues resolved.
Well, we want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful, and we pray for the best.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Samuel Atintono is the Secretary of the University of Education Winneba Branch of the University Teachers Association of Ghana, UT. Teacher unions are kicking against government decision to dismiss head teachers of two secondary schools over extortion in the ongoing admission under the free senior high school policy. The Ghana Education Service, in a statement yesterday, announced the sacking of one Wisdom Blazu of Pentecost Senior High School in the Eastern Region and an assistant head of Dafor Senior High School, Reverend S.P. Elewoko, and further announced the interdiction of seven other school administrators. So what is actually the position of the working conditions and laws of the teaching profession? We have on the line the General Secretary of the Ghana National Association of Teachers, NAT, David Ofori Champone. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, my brother.
Is NAT in support of the other unions who are calling for a reversal of the punishment meted out to some teachers and heads?
Well, I do not know if my sister colleagues have asked for that, but we have done that. We have done that on the basis of procedure. In our working relationship with our employer, the Ghana Education Service, we've set up a collective agreement. In it is our working conditions and our code of professional conduct. It comes with what are infractions and the punishment related for those infractions. And the procedure is that at every district level, if any of our colleagues is found to have flouted the regulations of our code of ethics, he is supposed to appear before a district disciplinary committee. And then when judgment is passed on his conduct and he is not satisfied, he can then proceed to the regional disciplinary committee for redress. If the regional disciplinary committee confirms the decision of the district disciplinary committee, you can still petition the national disciplinary committee. Just like in the case of the judicial service, you can go to court, go to our appeals court, and go to the Supreme Court. In this particular instance, these colleagues of ours were never hauled before the district disciplinary committee for them to get opportunity to appeal to the regional disciplinary committee for redress. But the punishment is meted right from the headquarters, the final authority. And for us, we see it as procedural error. We do not care whether they hit the process or not. What is important is that if our employers feel that they have flouted the regulation that regulates our relationship as employees with our employer, the procedure must be followed. And for us, what was done yesterday was a slap in the face of due process, for which we are unhappy, and we have raised our displeasure as such.
Sir, is it my understanding that these procedural matters are meant to ensure truth, fairness, and justice?
That is exactly what they are supposed to do.
So if that is the case, and headquarters can see that this is a clear issue, that even if you pass through the procedures, you still arrive at the same conclusion. What will
they
be
don't
wrong?
Have to, they don't have to start the process. The process must begin from the district level. At the district in which the schools are constituted, headquarters has representation at the district level. We have district directors. If you look at our condition of service and our code of ethics, we have disciplinary committees at the district level, at the regional level, and at the headquarters level. Headquarters is supposed to be the final arbiter, after which the affected individual can seek redress in the law courts. So how can you drop the gun?
Have you heard from these affected members of yours?
Well, we heard from a lot of them. We are still collating the rest. We have called them to meet us in a meeting on Monday. and we are going to register our protest to the GES Council and tell them that, look, if you people with whom we have an agreement regulating our relationship are not prepared to follow due process, do not be surprised if we also refuse to follow due process in seeking redress for our grievances. I don't think that is what Ghana wants.
What are you insinuating?
What I'm insinuating is that if they, in the face of the fact that over the years, GES has flouted these regulations that have been sent to court, and they've been found guilty, and Ghana has paid judgment debt for the wrongs of GES, for not following due process, and in 2017, they are still doing the same thing. I want to assure them that if they, as partners in employment, can flout due process, they should not fault us, and the Ghanaian people should not fault us if we also decide not to follow due process.
So you intend one of your possible actions could be to strike?
That is an option, but what we are going to do is that we are a respectable union. In Ghana, we are the single largest union. If we take our educational system, if we take teachers in the basic education, we are the largest. If you go to second cycle schools, we are the largest. If you go to education directories, we are the largest. And if we are law-abiding, we don't see why our employer cannot be law-abiding.
But sir, does the law really work within GES?
Well, it's up to them to actualize it. For us, we are obedient to the law. You see, my brother, the issue is that we are not contesting whether they've erred or not. All that we are saying is that if they think they've erred, use the procedure to punish them. You don't summon them to headquarters and punish them from headquarters. Why do you want them to seek redress? From United Nations or UNESCO or AU?
Well, that's probably why I asked the question. Is it not the way things are done in GES? For instance, headmasters take decisions sometimes whimsically. They take capricious decisions. It happens. I'm sure you know of that.
And my brother, I'm saying that if they take whimsical decisions, capricious decisions, it's up to the districts from where they operate, using the guidelines to exert the punishment. It is not for headquarters to call them and intimidate them and tell them that you have been suspended, and within 30 minutes you are giving a letter and dismissing people who have served for 35 years, 40 years. Is that fair? Use procedure to punish them. I have sat in this front committee where we have punished teachers who have erred. So why can't you uphold the procedure? That's all we are saying. We are saying that the procedural observance of our regulation. If they think that the headmasters have done what is wrong, use them through the process and punish them. But we won't have a system where people who have to appeal to higher authority for redress is the higher authority who extends it. My brother, if you have a case in court, the court has to adjudicate. If you are not satisfied, you go to an appeals court. If you are not satisfied, go to the Supreme Court. How can the Supreme Court hear a case, when the High Court has not even dealt with it? That is exactly what they have done. And I'm surprised because, look, over the years, GES has done the same thing. And people have gone to court, and it has been a judgment debt on the government of Ghana because people didn't follow simple procedure.
So it is your position that what has happened beyond procedural matters, there are legal infractions?
We are saying that, look, if our people have erred, take them to the process and punish them. But don't jump the gun. They have overjumped the gun. And that's what we are telling them. My brother, let me tell you, we are a union of international reputation. Our membership cuts across the political divide. But in everything that we do, it is the interest of our members and the state that we protect. We don't want a situation to arise where people would target us being politically influenced.
But if
the interest of our members,
if a professional union with people who are respected will, quote unquote, take decisions that are bumptiously blatant against the laws of the land, what do you expect?
My brother, have they told you what they did?
They charge fees according to...
Let me tell you, among some of the officers we have called, who have been here is a headmaster who just took over the administration of a new school on Monday. Then the students report. The uniforms are not ready. But in the prospectus, they are supposed to get, what do you call it? There's this check thing. I don't know how they term it now. This, you know, the house dress.
Yes.
Of checks that you have to buy. So the people go to town and buy the checks and come. And somebody calls and say that the school has sold us checks. And without due regard and investigation, you say that it amounts to interdiction. Is this fair when the school has not done anything? Is it fair? Can you do this to anybody? And you expect us who are paid by the members of the union to sit down unconcerned?
Well, as teachers, you are equally parents to all these children under your care. And you've been told not to charge certain things. Is it going to create a situation where you look on even when things are going wrong at the expense of even health of children?
You are getting me wrong. We have advised our members to go by the regulation. We have expressed our appreciation for the introduction of the free education. We have taught students who could have progressed because of poverty that didn't move on. So we don't have a problem with the policy. What we are saying is that if there's infraction, deal with the people according to law. Let me ask you. You ask schools to submit a list of vacancies in their schools. So a school gives you 400. Then you, using an exit of students from the school, gives them 600. Where do you expect the 200 students to sit? Is it not an infraction of regulation? Ask them. Over the last 3 years, headmasters were saddled with huge numbers to accommodate in secondary schools. If your mind would take you back, at Infantsipim, students were sleeping on trunks. You remember?
I remember very well. Very well.
What it meant was that the number that they had given for engagement of the school for boarders was over exceeded. And so as they moved to Form 2, Form 1 vacancies were sacrificed for those in Form 2 to get sleeping places. As they move to Form 3, the same number moves ahead. So if you use the existing number by way of WAEC exam to say that in 2017, 700 students exited from, let's say, infants from school, and therefore we should give them the same amount of 700 students. Is it fair? When you knew that 3 years ago, you overburdened infants from with 700 students. And then we all sit down and allow them to take decisions because they think that people are sabotaging the system. Is it fair?
Well, I'm trying to understand your position, but the question I'm asking is, you are taking care of children. Now that government is taking this decision, if, for instance, in your school, mosquitoes are biting the children, will you see, because if you ask them to buy mosquito net for their own health, you will be punished, so you won't do that?
That is the reason why the Ghanaian people must react. Look, we cannot and I accept to accept the fact that parents have played pivotal role in the effective administration of our schools. As I speak to you, there are many, many schools across the country who have dormitories and classroom blocks built by parents. How did they arrive at that? They have buses bought by parents. How did they arrive at that? Because the parents felt that their kids were there, they needed to contribute for the comfort stay of their students in school. And so if you are putting a mechanism where you are absorbing a certain portion of tuition and other fees and the rest, do you then have to go and tell parents that they don't need to pay anything?
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time. We've spoken to Professor Amankwa, Professor, who is the Acting Director General of GES. He says if you have any concern, he's ready to listen to you. So
We have concerns. We have tried to contact your office to pick our phones.
Well, he says you come. He said you should come. Monday, he will listen to you.
Well, we will send people to go engage them. But the point is that let me tell people, our union is not a political institution. We have a membership that cuts across political divide. And so we take decisions in the interests of ourselves as workers, our students, with whom we have commitment, and for the nation.
All right.
And therefore, if people will not accept that fact and think that they will not listen to us,
and they will disregard due process. We want to serve notice to them that we can equally disregard due process.
All right. We want to thank you very much for your time. We pray that you don't get to that stage. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
David Ofori Champon is the General Secretary of the Ghana National Association of Teachers, NAT. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana and moving on to other stories. Before farmers could overcome the havoc that the fall armyworm had caused to their farms, scientists at the Crop Research Institute of the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research is warning of the invasion of the fall armyworm again, this time with a severe consequence for farms and farmers across the country. More than 100,000 acres of farms were affected in spite of government spending some 8 million cedis on chemicals and another 8 million cedis on education and sensitization, all aimed at combating the armyworm invasion. Meanwhile, the Minister of State at the Presidency in charge of Food and Agriculture, Dr. Nora Buyele, has told Behind the News that government will soon write to CSIR for the report and study it, and then that will form the next line of action at the policy level. We have on the line Dr. Kofi Frimpong, and he is an entomologist at the Crop Research Institute. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News. Thanks for your time, Doc. On what basis did you arrive at this conclusion of a possible armyworm invasion again?
Yeah. Well, if you look at the trend of infestation right from the beginning of this year, a certain trend can be predicted. For instance, we first experienced an outbreak or invasion in the southern part of the country at the beginning of the planting season, around April, May, thereabouts. That is when we had a lot of farmers crying about the infestation. But after some time, when government intervened, when the insecticides were applied, it appeared the population subsided. And after a few weeks, nothing was said about it. What happened was that at that time, the maize had reached at maturity. So there was, these pests could not attack it at that stage because they usually attack it when the maize are growing up, first weeks after germination. And after some few weeks, we heard that the outbreak has reached the northern part of the country. Now, what happened was that at that time, they had started planting, and their maize were young. So the infestation was very high. That was when they experienced their infestation. So right now, it appears that they have been able to control the infestation right now. So we are no more receiving reports of infestation. But what happened is the second season that the southern part of the country is about to experience has just begun because the farmers have just started planting because the rains returned this month. So when they germinate and grow up a bit, the pests are going to re-attack it. Also, we have to be on the alert. Now, in between the major and the minor, I planted few of them at my backyard and I did an assessment. And I found out that about 90% of the plants were attacked, though I was interested in collecting the insect for my experiment. So I did not apply insecticide. I took them for my laboratory work. So that is the basis for which I am making the prediction that if care is not taken, we will have another outbreak during this minor season.
And what care that should be taken to avoid this?
The first is, the sensitization that you talked about, it appears the farmers are not yet in full control of the dynamics involved in the pest. Most of them are aware that the pests have only one stage, that is the larval stage. But the pests have four main stages. They have the eggs, the larva, the pupa, and the adult, which is a moth, or like, let me put it in a butterfly. So most of the pests are not, most of the farmers are not aware of this. So they need to sensitize them. At least each farmer should be able to identify the moth and also the larva, and if possible, the eggs. We have done some studies, and we can now predict the egg-laying pattern in the farm. And also, there's the need for the farmer to identify early infestation. In reality, the pests need only 2 weeks to raise down the farm. That is the larva stage, which lasts about 2 weeks. So when you do not put in the right intervention at that stage, it becomes extremely difficult to control, and you are going to lose your produce. So ideally, a farmer should be able to identify when the first attack, within the first 5 days, when the eggs hatch. At that time, the larvae are susceptible to insecticide when you apply them. But at later stages, they are a bit difficult to be dealt with, especially when they bore into the hole and sometimes get into the stem. When you apply the insecticide, it might be difficult to get to the insect, so the control becomes a bit difficult.
That means this whole thing is quite technical. We are told, for instance, that the fall armyworm discovered last year was quite different from the armyworm we all know. So how can we then know which one is the devastating one?
All right. We have now, there are about 3 kinds of armyworms we have in Africa. We used to have 2, the African armyworm and the beetroot armyworm. And now we have the fall armyworm also coming into the system. But the other 2 that are indigenous to this part cannot have such devastation compared to that of the fall armyworm. And there are things that can be done to identify or to differentiate between the fall armyworm and the other 2 that you talk about, particularly when the infestation is at the earlier stage. At the earlier stage, what you can identify and distinguish the fall armyworm from the other is that because their mouth parts of the larvae are not well developed, they usually chew the leaves, but are not able to chew it wholly. So you see something like a net, they scrape the surface or the lamina of the maize. So you see some, it's like a net or a window pane, we call it, on the maize. So the moment you see that, it should be an indication to you that you have the fall armyworm in there. It's only at the latter stage that an ordinary person may pick the fall armyworm larvae and identify it by the usual norm which we use to identify. That's where you have the Y shape on the head. And even the African armyworm has that Y shape. And also the last but one segment where we have 4 black dots on. So that is the stage that farmers can visualize. But at the earlier stage, it's only the symptoms that are shown on the maize that can be used to identify them.
Doc, in an attempt to avoid the possible invasion on a higher level, will it be ideal for us as a country to maybe target part of the farmland and deal with it instead of trying to do mass control of this program?
Ideally, as my director would say, when we do apply the insecticide, it's just like firefighting.
Okay.
It's because we have been taken by like a storm. So we have to introduce the insecticide to control them. But there are other natural enemies that will also attack the pest. That some will feed on the eggs, the larvae, the pupa, and even the adults. So we will have to exploit those avenues in order to be able to control them. So we can't continue to rely on the insecticide because we know about the effects on the environment, the possibility of pest resistance, and a whole lot of other issues. So we need to actually make an effort, a concrete effort, to look at other possible ways of controlling the pests, including the use of the natural enemies. And also, there are other we have to also look at the possibility of agronomic practices. For instance, we have an information from the Volta region. Some of their land races were able to withstand the fall armyworm attack. As to whether they have that property, we can't tell unless we evaluate it. So, and other farmers are also indicating that when they plant the maize with alongside a peanut, the infestation is low. That one we need to evaluate. So they need to study all these things in order to come out with the right recommendation.
Doc, for me, the center of all these is our health. Two things. Are there health implications if you eat a cereal, for instance, attacked by the armyworm? And the other one, can we eat without health implications those attacked and sprayed with chemicals?
Yeah. Let me answer the first one concerning when the fall armyworm attacked the maize, there's a health implication. In reality, the pest also attacked the ear itself or the cob and eats the grain. Now, when it attacks it, it does not have any health implication, but it also exposes to secondary attack by other fungi that will also cause it to rot, or like the aflatoxin that we all know about. So that issue is there. And also, when we apply the insecticide, at a certain stage in the maize, if it's applied late and harvested a bit earlier, for instance, if the maize are treated with insecticide and few days afterwards they are harvested for the fresh corn, you might have insecticide residues in them. So that is the health implication we have to look about.
Okay. But by merely spraying the crops with chemicals, there's no health implication.
Yeah, there are health implications, particularly with respect to the one who is applying the insecticide. You know, we have to put on the full gear, right, the protective gear. But, you know, most of these farmers don't put on the protective gear. So there's that health implication aspect there.
Oh, okay. Right. Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time on our show. We are very, very grateful.
You're welcome.
Dr. Kofi Frimpong-Enin is an entomologist at the Crop Research Institute, the Center for Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana, and also on the line is the 2016 National Best Maize Farmer, Kofi Vignon. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, sir.
We're hearing of warning of another, this time more devastating, invasion of fall armyworms. How do you receive that?
Thank you and good evening. And I say good evening to listeners. This news, I'll say, is a bad news to farmers. But it doesn't also go well to farmers, I'll say so. You know, doctor has taken us through a lot of solution, because whatever doctor was saying is about solution. But what I will say is that, so far as doctor has the solution, I will be very much grateful if farmers can be gathered and all this education given to farmers. And when we do that, all of this thing will be solved within a twinkle of an eye. You know, doctor has given a lot of solutions. I have listened, doctor, for some time. He has given a lot of solutions. So when farmers are given the capacity, they build farmers' capacity, they train farmers, they give the farmers education, and immediately you see a sign of armyworms in your farm, you'll be able to control it. And when it happens like this, all these fears putting in farmers will not be there. Because when farmers get to hear news like this, you know, it is difficult for you to go into production. And when farmers also didn't go into production, the country suffered. Because in Ghana, the majority of the food we eat, about 80% are cereal. So you see, and these are what the worms are also invading now.
So I will plead with God, and I will plead with the authorities concerned that this news must get to the farmers down there, so that we all put our hands together and fight these worms.
Have you begun the second planting season?
Yes.
And how does it look like? Do you get signs of feather attacks?
Yes, we've gotten signs of feather attacks, but you know me, I'm an organic farmer. So you know what I use to control the armyworm? It's neem extract. I use neem extract to control the armyworm, and it's very effective.
What is that?
So, neem. You know, when I take the neem leaves, I grind them and I extract, you know, I squeeze the water out of it. Then I use it to apply my maize, and it controls the armyworm very well. So that is what I use.
But what quantity can you get out of that?
Oh, I got, you know, the point is that, you know, you see, I'm doing farming as business. So wherever I'll get the leaves, I have to travel long distance to get the leaves to come and control the worms so that I can get my money, because it's money that I put there in the soil. So you can get a lot of quantity. If you are, you really mean to control them, you'll be able to get a quantity, because there's a lot of neem tree around the country, which we are really not using them for anything.
That neem tree is bitter. Is it the case that the fall army worms are not comfortable with bitter things?
Yes, it's bitter, so they are not comfortable with it. Because in my farm, you know, we did a small garden at our backyard, because we are also trying to do a search to see how we can also protect our crops on the field. So we did a small test and we saw that it worked. So that is what we are doing in our commercial farm. Because we are not allowed to, you know, spray this poison, because we are organic farmer. It's against the law of organic farming. So you have to find any possible way, means to use the things around you, to control your pest or control your farm. And that is exactly what we did. And it worked perfectly.
So how did you come by neem? Was it a try and error thing, or somebody told you about it?
No, but you know, we've been given training and capacity building by an NGO.
Okay.
They are in the Netherlands. They normally come to train us. They are called PUIM. P-U-I-M. PUIM. And because we are organic farmers, they normally fly from Netherlands to come to Ghana, come to our area. So we gather all our farmers. Then they give us capacity building and training. So they show us a lot of things. How to do your own compost, because you are not allowed to buy these fertilizers in the market to use to do your farm. So you need to use the things around you, build your own fertilizers, get your own insecticide to control your farm. So that is how we come by all these things. So that is why I always say that farmers need capacity building. Farmers need to get the information. Farmers doesn't have the information. That is why this fall armyworm has been able to spread so serious like this. But if farmers have the information, I tell you, my brother, farmers will control this one within a twinkle of an eye. But farmers doesn't have the information. So farmers need to be given the information. Farmers need the training. Farmers need the information. So it is the farmers who need the information to fight this web. So I will plead with Doc that he has a lot of information that can help farmers. So they should try to organize farmers and give this information to them. So they also use it for the benefit of this nation. Because when agriculture grows, Ghana has grown, the economy will grow.
Mr. Venu, I'm just interested in your organic process of solving this problem. If it is largely because this thing is bitter, the pawpaw tree, the pawpaw leaves, and then bitter leaves, there are so many other bitter things. Have you tried using all those ones as well?
No. I use the neem. I've not used the pawpaw tree, because the pawpaw tree cannot be bitter than the leaf, the neem. You know, the neem is bitter, and the neem itself is also a fertilizer.
Okay.
You understand? So as you are using it to control your pest, it's also a kind of fertilizer that is also boosting the growth of your plants.
So how many farmers in your operational area are aware of this NIM thing?
Oh, you see, I have been campaigning for this organic agriculture for some time now. So we have over 300 farmers who are going through this organic agriculture. So I can say that 300 farmers or more than 300 farmers know of it, because I speak also on radio a lot concerning organic agriculture. So we are introducing this NIM also to farmers, because farmers doesn't have money to be buying the distance. And you know, the chemical, the use of chemical in this country is so much that even our big men, if you ask dog will tell you that maybe dog even doesn't eat vegetables again. You understand? A lot of people doesn't eat vegetables in this country because it has been contaminated. The poison, the residue, the chemical residue in the vegetables are so much because farmers are not being given the education. So farmer will spray today and tomorrow you go and harvest and bring it to the market. So that is a challenge we are having now. So that is why some of us are seriously promoting the organic agriculture in the country.
Okay. Right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. We are very grateful, sir.
Thank you, too.
Kofi Vignon is the 2016 National Best Maize Farmer. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. We will be back after this break.
And send me a baby say, which a bar could be a 15 points. Who person wish videos? See a enyum, nya entertainment, a hoodwo, amunumu, amunumua, quang ben a faso.
Doctor, use a glock cafe.
Witcher, water data, Google also. Dibiache, na when you're being so a chafa, quang ben a faso ye.
That dialy, glock cafe.
Witcher, quang shisha ben a faso free data, and now unita, we hear code.
Glock cafe.
Witcher, no so. Who per quam emerso the customer care agent, dinkute hua. Ehe fana woko.
Glow Cafe.
Ah, crache. Who beja? Content and Ben will fast recharge your line. Sanctia post pay bills.
Glow Cafe.
Crache. San at you. Afe. Koko kra. Who pay your day in your Glow Cafe? E go phone so.
Glow Cafe.
Madam, me show si kwekwe nya po. E den a question be a baby send be a or si Glow Cafe.
Send the bars call 595 and now bet to me download the free app on 100 stores.
Afe Glow Cafe application no ma okwai ma out me show si ni. E sign streaming yun be a wope. Me hear ni se obe recharge you data any voice. We bet me at your data. Asana your new maybe brain. Would the answer we bet send the bus? I call 595 and I download the Glow Cafe application over Play Store.
The Grandmasters of Data. Glow Ghana.
Welcome back. Some of your text messages. Daniel, here in Accra, says, George, in fact, in Africa, and for that matter, Ghana, we have primitive minds, which is hampering our growth. Until we change our attitude, things will not be well with us. Al-Hassan Wunwana in Wa says, the sacking or interdiction of these headmasters is appropriate because it will serve as deterrent to other headmasters. Joe DC says the interdiction is a calculated attempt to make the Free Senior High School popular and also frighten heads. Monica Consi Navrongo says, George, in fact, why must we use tribes to determine who heads an institution? What is happening at Winneba? With what is happening at Woodman, I think these tribal sentiment must stop. Sammy from Suhum says, with this punishment meted out to the heads, the students in the final analysis will suffer because the other heads will not treat them well. George Sehwe Youth Movement appreciates the way you present the program Behind the News. Government must and should put in measures to solve the University Teachers Association of Ghana grievances. Teacher Fuachi in Sehwe also, Kofi Krum sent in that one. Please, George, why were those heads of schools that were found to have collected unapproved fees sacked or asked to step aside for investigation, but the chief executive of BOST was not asked to step aside for investigations? This decision by the Ghana Education Service or government is not fair. House party in Cape Coast sent in that one. The sacking of the headmasters who were collecting money from the students and parents is in the right direction. Such conduct should not be tolerated. And you did not add your name. Thank you for your text messages and thank you for being with us throughout the week. This is how we end today's edition of Behind the News. My producers have been Seth Eya, John Pobi, Belant Elom Tete, Sarah Teni, Babu Hima, and John Adoko Akampale. George Kwaku was our sound engineer, and I'm George Asikri. Have a lovely weekend.